And my dad was like, what are you talking about? Like, you want to quit your job to do this golf company? Like, that's so stupid.
How much of what you do feels like work, and how much of it is like really fun?
I think if we would have set out like with the plan of like, hey, we're going to build this company, the company that we've, that this thing's grown into, we would have failed miserably. We weren't doing it for money. We were doing it just, because it kept us in touch and it was a hobby and all that. I think that kind of became the baseline for still the baseline for what we do now. Truly staying focused on like the audience and the content is what matters, which it's kind of what drives the whole thing. Certainly there's stuff that we've messed up over the years, but I think at the end of the day, like as long as the vast majority of your stuff is on point, you're doing the best you can. You're never going to be perfect.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rippin'.
All right, welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Another awesome episode for our listeners tonight. We've got Tron Carter of No Laying Up. Tron, thanks for joining, man.
Thanks for having me. Stoked to get into it.
Yeah, so this is a big evening for us. I'm a huge No Laying Up fanboy, have been for years. I know a lot of our audience listens to No Laying Up, and so slid into Tron's DMs, and he was nice enough to reply and say he was happy to come on. Really appreciate you doing it, man. And it sounds like you're in Florida tonight.
I am, yeah. Back at home. I was in Wisconsin last week for the week, and I'm headed up to Atlanta this weekend and then Colorado for BMW Championship Media Day
Sweet.
On Monday. So, yeah, kind of savoring this time at home, although it's getting really hot here.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I have like a bunch of questions. We probed some of our listeners and got some submissions as well for you. So excited to dig in. I think it'd be good maybe to just start. I don't know that I've ever gotten like the full rundown of just like the No Laying Up backstory. I know, kind of started a bunch of guys in college at Miami of Ohio. I have some off the pod stories of Miami of Ohio nights back in the day. But yeah, would love to just hear like the backdrop of how you guys got started and kind of how things took off.
Yeah. So I guess first things first, I grew up playing golf, played in high school. Didn't really want to quit playing football. So I didn't probably could have played like lower level college golf, but it's just kind of like, hey, fuck it. I'm going to just, enjoy myself and thought about walking on to Miami and then got up there and took one look at the girls and the party scene. And I was like, all right, I'm going to be at school here from September to May and from Atlanta originally. And it was like, absolutely not. Like, why would I ever want to play golf here? So, freshman year, right down the hall was Chris Solomon, who Solly, as many people know him from the podcast. Neither of us really got along with our roommates freshman year, so we just like ended up hitting it off right away. We played a lot of NCAA 2004, Tiger Woods. Went out drinking all the time and just became fast friends and stayed friends all through college, and then Randy, aka Phil Landis, he transferred in. He played basketball at Washington and Lee for a couple of years and then transferred in. He was a couple of years older, but kind of hit it off with him junior year when he got to Miami as well. And it was, kind of same deal of like, hey, let's just, watch golf, watch football and drink some beers on the couch. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And then we started a text thread either late college or after college where none of our friends were really that big of golfers. So we were kind of, it was a way for us to keep in touch. And I think a couple other friends got looped in on the text thread and they were like, hey, you guys are funny with this stuff. You guys should start a Twitter account. Didn't even know what Twitter was at the time. So we ended up starting a Twitter account. I think Solly did. And all of us just tweeted at, kind of off it. Into oblivion there. I don't think anybody was following us at that time for probably a couple of years. And I think slowly but surely, you know, we kind of like golf tends to be 4, 5, 6 years behind the rest of sports, the rest of society. So finally, like Billy Horschel, Chris Stroud, there were a few random PGA Tour pros that started following us kind of along the way. And then, you know, people said, hey, you guys should flesh this out more. You should start a website. So my brother was recently graduated from Columbia and was working out in San Francisco for a tech startup. So I called him up. I'm like, hey, we got to start a website. You know anything about that? He's like, yeah, sure. Like, I don't think he knew anything about it, but, you know, figured it out. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, we started a podcast, you know, a couple of years after that. And that was 2014, I think. And there was no golf podcast at the time. Like, it was, and like, I didn't even really listen to podcasts. So it was kind of a, you know, leap of faith of like, we just set an audio recorder on the table when we were at Hilton Head for the Heritage 1 year, just hanging out. And, you know, that was that. I'm sitting there eating chips and salsa and drinking beers and we were yelling about Matt Kuchar and So from there, same deal as Twitter. I don't think anybody was really listening for this first probably 20 to 30 episodes. And then Rory came on pretty early on. Spieth came on pretty early on. JT, few other guys and kind of gave us some credibility and then slowly but surely other outlets, you know, some of the endemic media brands, Golf Digest, Golf Channel, ESPN, they start kind of catching up a little bit, but we've just kind of hopefully been a step ahead really for the last going on 10 years now. So along that way, we brought in DJ Pihowski, who was managing Scratch, which is like a subset of the PGA Tour at the time. And, you know, he was kind of a one-man show doing all their social media at the tour. Now I think they have a team of about 75 people doing what he was doing at the time. And so we brought him in and we were like, hey, we should start doing video stuff. So same kind of thing. Like we, 2017, we went down to Australia, kind of figured out like, you know, hey, how can we get somebody to pay for us to go to Australia? Like Zach Blair became a friend and he was going down for the Aussie Open. And we're like, yeah, like let's go down to Australia for like 6 days. So we ended up going down there for 6 days. We all still had full-time jobs at that time too. Like I was working revenue management for Ritz-Carlton, Marriott, Solly, Randy were both working for big four accounting firms. Neil was working at Google by that point. And then, you know, DJ hadn't quite come on full-time with us. So kind of in short order over the next couple of years, all of us quit our full-time jobs and took the leap of faith and then kind of the rest is history. So we've been doing it full-time now for, I guess, 6 years. And it's kind of been no looking back. Like, you know, COVID, we thought, all right, people aren't going to be commuting. They're not going to be in their cars listening to podcasts. And lo and behold, golf got more popular. People started listening to more podcasts than ever. So, you know, that was a net positive for us. And we've tried to grow kind of conscientiously, not try to be all things to all people. We try to serve kind of the core golfer, like the enthusiast, you know, and there's other podcasts, there's other outlets out there that are covering the pro game. We try to kind of, you know, have a focus on the pro game, but also, you know, through our video stuff or like we hired Kevin Van Valkenburg from ESPN this year, last year, and try to beef up our writing again. And, you know, just kind of trying to reinvest in the product, but not really, like, I don't know even how to describe what we do. It's kind of, you know, it's a message board, it's travel videos, it's, you know, but I think at the end of the day, like, our mission is, like, to make people feel good about golf. So, I think over the last couple of years, that's been harder and harder with all the, you know, bullshit going on in the pro game. So, you know, that's certainly difficult at times, but I think that's made us lean more into some of our video stuff or, you know, some of the other stories out there. So,
yeah,
that's kind of the 10,000 foot view.
Yeah, that's, I want to dig into some areas. So what was that period of time like when you were like, do you remember the day when you quit your job and you were like,
I do. Yeah. I remember, it's funny because so Neil and I are brothers. So our dad, we were growing up, our dad always worked in the contact lens business and he worked for Siebel Vision, Bausch & Lomb, like big multinational corporations for like 25, 30 years. And then when I was in high school, maybe just getting into high school, he quit with Bausch & Lomb and started his own thing. And, you know, he was like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have done this 10 years prior. Like, bet on yourself, you know, do that. And then, so sure enough, like, I'm, you know, I was moderately successful with Marriott. Like, I started on, like, the night shift at Ritz. Ton of stories from, like, you know, dealing with, like, Jeezy and T.I. and Lil Wayne and, like, NBA teams.
Atlanta,
and,
baby.
Oh,
Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, this was like Atlanta back in you know, early like 2010s. And yeah, so I got three podcasts full of stories from all that. But met my wife working the overnight. Like, she was the AM restaurant manager. And then kind of moved over into like meetings and special events. All the baseball teams stayed with us. So I did all the baseball teams. Like, they typically checked in at, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. coming in from the previous city. And then from there, I got into revenue management. And so I kind of had it in my mind, hey, I'm going to be, you know, I'm probably going to move to D.C. at some point. I'm probably going to work it, you know. So then started working for Marriott Corporate, left Ritz, worked for Marriott Corporate. And, you know, it was going really well. And my dad was like, what are you talking about? Like, you want to quit your job to do this golf company? Like, that's so stupid. And, you know, sure enough, like, we had Callaway lined up as a sponsor at that point. And then we're kind of talking to BMW. Like, I think BMW had brought us out to, like, the BMW championship and, you know, paid us a nominal amount of money, but was just like, hey, like, you know, they were betting on kind of social media and podcasts and stuff. So it was cool. Like, they were, you know, they kind of took a chance on us. But I think with Callaway, we're basically like, hey, we have 6 to 12 months of runway here. If we do want to quit our jobs, go hustle for more sponsors and figure out how to make this a business, like, you know, because we had kind of been bootstrapping it for like 3 or 4 years and, you know, saved up a little bit of money within the business. And but I remember my dad being like, man, like, you should really like wait till the last possible moment, when really I had a 6-month-old at home. My wife's a saint. We were living in Boston. I was like, all right, I got to get the hell out of Boston. We're living in this tiny little, you know, 600 square foot apartment, like right in Back Bay. Great place to live before you have kids. And then our first kid was kind of a surprise, Freddie. And so we were like, all right, we got to get the heck out of here. So we moved to Florida, moved down here to Ponte Vedra, where like DJ was living already. And then we're like, all right, cool. Like, this is, you know, child care is less expensive. Feels like we're in a good spot. I think I was down here for probably close to a year before I took the plunge. And so the day I you know, gave my notice, I think I worked for like another 4 or 5 weeks, kind of finished out through January, through like budget season. And at that point I was managing like revenue for about 12 or 13 different hotels. And just, I was getting so burned out from like doing that and then doing this at night as well. And I was like, I can't do both and be a husband and a father and all that. So, and I wasn't doing either very well. So I was just like, all right, I'm going to quit my job. And then we lined up, we actually went to the first day after leaving my job, we flew to Abu Dhabi. And they were
such a power move.
They were like, you know, IMG was managing the Abu Dhabi, you know, basically like the Dubai Desert Classic, but it's like the second event of the year on the Euro Tour. So they brought us over there and you know, we just did like, you know, we basically just did a video of like, hey, here's us riding around in the desert, hanging with, you know, like Fleetwood won that week. And I remember like hanging out in the clubhouse with Tommy and Finno and Tommy's wife and a few other people and just like drinking some beers out of the trophy. I was like, this is pretty awesome, man. And from then on, it was like, man, like, yeah, like we're going to pour ourselves into this. And so Randy was coaching high school basketball at the time. He had quit his job. He had been coaching high school basketball for a couple of years, and he was doing consulting on the side for like NCAA athletic departments. And so then he was doing special needs like teaching as well. So finally got him on board, and then I can't remember if DJ came on or Neil came on first, but Neil was working for Google at this point. And he was living back in New York and like making really good money. And I think they had him handcuffed to the business as far as stock options, you know? So my dad's like giving him the full guilt trip of like, oh, well, you know, you're going to leave, you know, however, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars with the stock options. And he's like, Dad, that's, that's always going to be the case. Like, that's how they get you, you know, like, yeah. The name of the fucking business is no laying up. Like, if I don't leave, I'm laying up. So, yeah, so that was kind of, you know, how we did it. And then kind of just, you know, we started, I guess that summer we went to Scotland and really turned like our Tora Sauce video series into kind of a sustainable franchise. Like, BMW started sponsoring that kind of in a big way. Trying to think, Charles Schwab came on pretty early on too. And, you know, it seemed like it kind of resonated with people of, hey, like, these guys are betting on themselves. And, you know, I think the product improved commensurately with the amount of work that we were putting into it. You know, and then COVID hits. It was funny, 'cause I remember thinking during COVID, like, in hotels, if there's no revenue coming in, if there's no occupancy or guests, there's no revenue to manage. So I actually would have lost my job during COVID.
Wow.
And like, I think with AI and just all the algorithmic stuff, as far as, you know, just machine learning and deep learning, like, all that stuff's getting applied to, you know, a lot of revenue strategy. So I don't think staying in that, you know, vertical within hospitality would have been the best decision. So I think, in a weird way, like, the safe move in hindsight was actually quitting my job and betting on myself. So,
man, that's so awesome to hear. And before I get into like questions about golf in general, would love to hear. I know, you know, Jordan and I kind of started this thing in an airport a year and a half ago, and we totally from the onset were like, yeah, this is just going to be fun. Like, we just want to do it.
Yeah.
We've seen a glimpse, like, or I've seen a glimpse kind of behind the camera of just like how much work it is to actually do, like, in our case, it's just a podcast and like an Instagram, right? And we just do it like totally for fun, right? But there's like days where I'm like, I don't really want to do this, like, right? And it's really fun for us, and like, we want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in your perspective. Like, this is your career, like, this is your profession, right? Like, how much of what you do feels like work, and how much of it is like really fun?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, like, people always say, you know, hey, did you set out to start what you did? And I think if we would have set out like with the plan of like, hey, we're going to build this company, the company that we've, you know, that this thing's grown into, we would have failed miserably. And I think, you know, just because it would have been so inorganic and, you know, just like, there, I think we would have made a lot of objective transactional decisions where I think, A, at the end of the day, like, having that 4 or 5 year head start of like, you know, we weren't doing it for money. We were doing it just, you know, because it kept us in touch and it was a hobby and all that. I think that kind of became the baseline for, still the baseline for what we do now of like, if we're not having fun on camera or in front of the microphone, then like, the audience certainly isn't either. And, you know, so like, you know, like, personally, I struggle with that sometimes, just more than like, I love the work that goes into it. Like, my wife gets on me all the time of like, you know, I don't take days off just because I love what I do. And it's, you know, and there's never really a dull moment, or like, there's such a blurry line between like, what's work and what's just my hobby, what's golf, you know? But I do struggle sometimes with like Valhalla a couple weeks ago, like that design and that setup and just everything, like, it was dog shit. And so it's my job to hop on camera. Like, we do a preview podcast on, you know, Monday or Tuesday. We do a happy hour show on Wednesday that's sort of a preview podcast and sort of predictions. And we do live shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, and then that week we did 8 hours on ESPN2 and ESPN+. So, you know, I was on camera like probably 25 to 30 hours, you know, that week. And I'm thinking, oh, like probably 20 hours. And I'm like, I'm not having any fun watching this golf because it's such a bad golf tournament and a bad setup. But, you know, thankfully all this stuff happened with Scotty, or, you know, unfortunately, but thankfully as far as content goes. And, you know, it was just kind of one of those things of like, the audience can feel that when you're stressed or when you're, you know, not having fun. So I struggle with that sometimes. But then again, like, there's nothing better than, like, I mean, U.S. Women's Open is a great example this week. Like, I'm so excited to watch that golf tournament. I think Lancaster is going to be an awesome venue. The crowds are going to be big. The energy around the tournament's awesome. And so, you know, you kind of feed off that and everything. But, But yeah, it's, I think the thing that I struggle with is we have like all these different verticals with the business, and now it's like managing people too. So we hired Ben. I think Ben was like kind of the first outside guy we hired other than like bringing DJ as a partner. Hired Ben, like he does a lot of our backend video stuff and you know, Nest stuff. And then we've got, you know, we hired Cody. Cody used to be, you know, Special Forces Army guy, and he's kind of our ops jack of all trades. And then, you know, we've got Casey who does merchandise and just a lot of behind the scenes stuff. We've got Jordan who helps us with copy editing and publishing and social. And then we've got KVV, obviously, who does all the writing and you know, a lot of the ideation and special projects and stuff. And it's one of those things of like, I don't think we realized how much we were doing and how much institutional knowledge we had until we had to kind of teach other people, hey, here's the ins and outs of the business, here's how to do it. And then also just setting up, you know, organization and communication and all that, of like how, you know, because we're all in disparate places now. Like we were all living here in Florida for a couple of years and we've all kind of spread out and now we're all in the country.
Yeah, and you're running a decentralized multimedia company. Like,
yeah. So Slack's become really important, or you know, Google Calendar, Google Docs, and all that stuff. So it's definitely a lot, and it's, you know, it's 24/7. Like, it's, you know, in social and like, so like this year, for instance, we've had, you know, we went down to Australia for 2 weeks at the beginning of the year. You know, we did that, and then that's the fun part. And then on the back end of that is 4 months of video editing that, you know, DJ and Ben are kind of managing, you know, they're editing, plus they're managing a team of editors and sound people and all that to put that out. Neil's doing account management on that stuff. Meanwhile, we're recording a bunch of other videos. We're doing all of our live shows like during golf season, during kind of peak pro golf. And then you've got, you know, we've got our Trap Draw podcast. We've got our Nest podcast. We've got our merchandise store. We do an event series, all that stuff. So it's kind of the biggest thing is just making sure that when you are on a podcast or when you're on a video, like it's, you're locked in on that thing. Like you're not distracted from that. And then, you know, once that ends, all right, cool. You can hop in the inbox or figure out your calendar from there. But, you know, truly staying focused on like the audience and the content is what matters, which it's kind of what drives the whole thing.
Yeah. And on that, I think the last year or 2 years have been really interesting in like golf media, just observing it. You know, I've really seen like this YouTube golf thing kind of blow up. And for folks that, you know, listen to No Laying Up or don't, that listen to us, the production quality and like what goes into your videos is like astounding. You know, it's almost like watching a Netflix like show. Like it's really unbelievable. And then you'll see this like video that's like, you know, I give like 1v1, I'm playing a set of clubs bought from, and it's just like this cliche like piece of shit, and no offense or anything, but like, you know, I do wonder, like, from your seat, you know, in those videos, like they get millions of views, right? I do wonder from your seat, like, how important has it been for you guys to stay like authentic to your brand and like what you're doing in a world that's like very clickbaity and chasing views and clicks? I mean, I think that's something that has been really admirable to watch, like as a fan, is like you guys have never sold out. I'm curious like what the tension's like for you there and
I think it's definitely a conscious thing. You know, I think having the podcast is kind of our revenue engine for the business, and having kind of that head start, it allows us to make, like, you know, on YouTube, like we don't have our videos monetized. Like, so you don't have to watch commercials unless we have, there's a few that we've used like copyrighted music that we don't have the rights to, but the song's just so perfect for it. And it's like, all right, we got to use this. But yeah, it's kind of been one of those things where like we've definitely had a focus on quality. I think there's been times where, you know, like I don't think we've been perfect with it by any means, but I think if you look at kind of the, you know, the wide swath of our stuff, it's, you know, focus on quality and a focus on like, you know, being ourselves. And I think at some point, you know, we're going to age with our audience. Like we're not trying to be all things to 22-year-olds coming straight out of college. It's our hope that, you know, like I think we do have a pretty wide audience as far as, I think when we started out, people thought we were, you know, all these millennials that are just because we're doing shit on TikTok or on Twitter and on YouTube. And, you know, it's kind of a new media company that, like, you know, I think there's a barrier to entry there for, you know, a certain age bracket, like, you know, over 40 or 45 there initially. It was kind of like our bread and butter was like that 25 to 38 or 40 year olds. And now I think it's skewing older and older where, you know, people are realizing, hey, like this isn't, you know, podcast isn't any different from a radio show that I download on my phone. Or, you know, some of our best interviews have been like Lee Trevino and like, you know, and those get sent around, like my dad sent it to a bunch of his buddies and they're all into it now. But same thing with video. It's like, there's, you know, the stuff that we're really passionate, like we're kind of old souls. Like the stuff that we're really passionate is like more like Bourdain or, you know, kind of travel, like really substantive character stuff that, you know, so I think, you know, what we've tried to do is like, we started out doing all of our video stuff on cell phones, right? And it's just like, we've tried to figure out, hey, how do we get it 90% of the way there as far as quality without sacrificing, you know, like nothing stinks up the vibe like having a film crew with you. Like we, you know, we've got Cody and Ben film a lot of our stuff, but like outside of that, like it's, you know, it's us passing the cameras around and, you know, them filming and they're part of the crew. Whereas we don't have some, you know, it's not like we have some Netflix team following us around. So certainly there's stuff that, you know, on the quality end that like we could probably get that extra 10%, but it would stink up the vibe to get all the way there as far as the quality goes. So, but yeah, I think as far as like, it just goes back to the same thing we were talking about, like last question, which is having that foundation of like camaraderie and friendship, I think is kind of the baseline for everything of just having fun and like people fire it up. Because I think we have a tendency sometimes to overthink what the concept is or to overthink, you know, certain things when sometimes it's just like people just want to fire it up and like come hang out kind of thing. Like they feel like they're hanging out with their buddies. It's and it's cool. It's like, you know, parasocial relationship and like in a good way, right? Like people come up all the time. They're like, oh my God, I feel like I know you. And then I'll talk to them and they're like, oh my God, you're exactly like you are in real life as you are. I'm like, I hope so. I'm not like a sociopath or something. You know, but yeah, it's, I think the minute or the day that changes the, you know, then like, I feel like we're probably in trouble, right?
Yeah. What do you, so one thing that's really interesting to me too, in just the arc of kind of your journey, you know, the beginning, right? Like you guys were kind of behind a wall of no laying up and firing out tweets that were hilarious and like hot takes and all the stuff you did, right? Increasingly, those opinions had become yours in a very public way.
Yeah,
I'm wondering what's that like for you?
It's I think it's become I mean, I go by Tron Carter. My name is Todd Schuster. I go by Tron Carter. It's a character from a Chappelle Show skit. It's like a recurring character, and the only reason I did that was because this thing was just so stupid when we started. Like nobody, and now it's too late to change it. And you know, and then B, like I didn't want my bosses knowing that I was doing this, you know, during the day or whatever, and So, yeah, so it's like, you know, I think it's, you definitely get typecast sometimes of like, oh, you know, like TC, you're the contrarian, or, you know, like Randy, you hate golf kind of thing. But I think we're all pretty malleable and like, you know, I think that's, we're all pretty independent thinkers for the most part. So I think it's, you know, there's some value there. I think the other thing too is like, we all know each other really well and we can play off of one another. So, you know, having some Easter eggs or some nuggets in there. And then sometimes like we are super predictable. People like that. Like, I know like, I, you know, like something will happen in a golf tournament or like last night there was a TIO relief in the NCAAs and, you know, 60 people must have tagged
that's
me.
Who's on
in
my list
tweets.
Of questions.
And I, you know, and I'm like, yeah, like that's great. Like that's like my calling, you know, it's like the wet bandit. It's like, that's our calling card, Marv, you know? So, but yeah, it's definitely, yeah, I think as we've gotten bigger, you definitely have to get, you know, a little bit more thoughtful about what you say, how you say it. You know, like, I mean, shit, like the last week or two, like, or I would say really like the last like 3 or 4 days, like the Grayson Murray stuff, like awful. And like, I Grayson and I clashed on Twitter. This was like 3, 4, 5 years ago. And I made light of like him hitting on a high schooler, right? On, you know, and like, you know, he said like, oh my God, I wish you weren't in high school or whatever. I made light of that. And then, you know, made a few other jokes along those same lines, nothing that I felt like was out of bounds or whatever. And then, you know, over the last week, like people pull up those tweets out of context and yeah. say, oh, like you bullied this guy. And I'm like, all right, like this guy was, you know, at the time was like a booze hound and spouting off on Twitter at every moment. And then as soon as he kind of made the decision a year and a half, 2 years ago to like try and clean up his life and get right, like, dude, like more power to you. Like, you know, I'm not going to shit on you. I'm not going to, you know, drag you down. Like, you know, if anything, like I tip my hat to you and, you know, good stuff there. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I think the live stuff is really, you know, just like everything in this country right now. Like, you know, it's, we try to be pretty apolitical, which is funny because people tend to ascribe, they're like, oh, like you guys are like liberal snowflakes. I'm like, I'm about as middle of the road as it gets on stuff. You know, like Randy's super liberal, KBB's super liberal. You know, Solly's probably more on the conservative side of things. Me and Neil, same, you know, same deal, or pretty down the middle. And it's one of those things where it's just like issue by issue. But I think there's something there with like everything's ratcheted up to a million over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And it's the same thing in golf with, you know, the PIF coming in and doing all the live stuff, and you have to take a side and this and that. And which is funny to me because I don't think anybody's been more critical of the PGA Tour than I have, except for maybe Phil Mickelson, you know. And like, it's like, hey man, like I'm with all the live people of like, dude, like the PGA Tour has completely fumbled the bag and been one of the most complacent, I would say borderline corrupt organizations over the last 15, 20, 25 years. But that said, like, I don't think live's the answer either. It's, you know, but, you know, it gets so polarized to where, all right, I'm an NLU guy. NLU's seen as pro tour. That means that I'm the enemy of all these live guys out there. And then no holds barred, gloves are off. They come at you on Twitter for anything and everything, you know, which that's the reality now. And that's that. But I think at the end of the day, like golf, Twitter, and the social element's a lot less fun. You know, and it just makes us kind of retreat into the podcast a little bit more.
Yeah. Tron, so go ahead, Jordan.
Just part of like being in the, call it golf world or industry, obviously you guys are a lot more close to it just with like sponsors and people that you work with. How much do you see behind the scenes, if any? Are you guys finding out information like we are? I'm just kind of curious. You know, how entrenched you are into the world of golf, whether it's for good or bad.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes because I almost forget sometimes what's public knowledge and what isn't, and kind of how to treat that info. And you kind of have to almost track it of like, hey, you know, I talked to this person, this is off the record kind of thing. But yeah, like I remember when this was March 2020, right before Thursday of the Players, like this was like Monday or Tuesday of that week. We had like a 7 or 8 hour dinner with the guys from the PGL. So who were, you know, trying to like Andy Gardner and those guys. And, you know, like, you know, just about them laying out basically like the concept that later became Live, or, you know, they watered it down and lost a bunch of the important details, I think, with Live. But that stuff, and that was, you know, so if you go back and listen to a lot of those podcasts we did over the next 12 to 18 months, because this stuff had been percolating really since like that fall kind of prior. A lot of that was informed by our relationships with those people or our relationships with a lot of the players. Right. And, you know, I mean, we've become good friends with, you know, different guys. Like it's been weird over the last couple of weeks, like the Rory divorce stuff, right? Like I don't have any inside knowledge there, but, you know, had dinner with Rory a handful of times. I would consider him a friend. Right. And it's one of those things. It's like, you don't know, you know, where's the line, right? So it's, you know, he's not a good friend. He's not someone that like, hey, if I had information, I would, you know, I think the important thing is the audience, right? Like, I think if we treat the audience with respect, but also sometimes treating the audience with respect is kind of having that, you know, that player, like what we try not to do is have like a gotcha moment, right? To where like, if somebody comes on the pod, like we're not going to ambush them. you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, hey, like let's have an adult conversation here, and you know, we'll wade into some uncomfortable questions from time to time, but we're not going to be unfair, hopefully, with it, you know. Yeah, it's something like, you know, I would say another good example is like the TV stuff. Like, we're extremely critical of CBS for a long time, you know, much more so than NBC. Now NBC is like, we're getting threats from them behind the scenes. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, the CBS people, it's like a lot of them are like leading on to us in 2019, 2020 of like, hey, like, you guys are right. Like, this shit does need to change. It's, the model's outdated. We need some new producers. We need some new blood. And so it's tough to be patient when you have those people, you know, kind of telling you, you know, and people at the tour being like, hey, you know, and then the CBS people are saying, hey, the tour's part of the problem here too. So it's, you got all these people in your ear and you got to make, you know, kind of the right judgment on it. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is like, you don't want to misrepresent people, right? Like, you want to, you know, and that's where sometimes it's just a matter of opinion, right? But I think that's where it comes back to the audience. Like, if the audience, they're pretty good at deciphering whether you're full of shit on something or not. And so, you know, if they're, you know, that's where I think social's a good thing, or, you know, podcast reviews are a good thing. Like, if you're full of shit on something, like, people are going to call you on it, you know? So that's kind of a, you know, and you're always going to have their subset of the 5% or 10% of people. You know, it's kind of the 90-10 rule, right? And, you know, it's, certainly there's stuff that we've messed up over the years, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, like, as long as the vast majority of your stuff is on point, you're doing the best you can. You're never going to be perfect.
Yeah. I want to get into your golf game a little bit, and then I got some rapid fire questions for you. Are you, you know, we hear this a lot from buddies of ours who work in golf or go in golf. They're like, I went in golf and I play a lot less. I don't think that's fully true for you guys. It seems like you get your rounds in. What's your game like?
Depends on who you're talking to. Yeah, I would say. So I live here in Florida now. So I'm in Northeast Florida. So like right now is like not golf season.
Yeah.
It's weird because like we're kind of off cycle, right? So it's, so like a couple of years ago, I think I played 120 rounds of golf. I didn't play a single round at home from like mid-March to early October. So I'm starting to play more at home now, just with kids and stuff.
Duval County?
We Duval Jags? County. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, I got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old boy. They're the biggest Jags fans you would ever, ever meet. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, we got a new stadium coming or a vastly refurbished stadium.
I'm a shameful Commanders fan, and looks like we inherited a Brandon McManus mess.
You did.
Vis-a-vis some Jacksonville plane ride.
And I grew up in Atlanta, so I got a full dose of Dan Quinn for time too. He's a good guy. I'm not sure. I don't know. I think his schemes may be a little bit.
He's a hashtag leader
stale.
Of men.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's what we went for.
But yeah, I think the golf wise, I'm trying to think. I've probably played, it's what? Late May or almost June, I've probably played 25 to 30 rounds so far this year, but 10 of those were in Australia. So yeah, 10 of them were in Australia. I've probably played 3 rounds at home.
Wow.
So I binge for like 2 weeks, and then I won't touch. Then like my clubs like won't leave my travel bag, and then I'll go on my next trip. So I went to Australia, to California, and played one round. Played Cyprus. We were in California. And then flew home, didn't touch a club for a while, and then played a member event at Tree Farm, like, again, like 6 rounds in 4 days. Tree Farm, Old Barnwell, Palmetto, and then went up to, and then flew to Scotland, and we played Troon, New Course, Old Course, Castle Course, Old Course Reversed, Shiskin. And then flew home from that and then did Wisconsin last week.
Nice.
2 rounds at Erin Hills and the Lido and then 1 other round. So
how was Lido? I'm going in a month.
It's sick. It's really cool. It's a lot to process. Like, it's, we probably caught it on the calmest, most benign day we possibly could have. Like it was, we had Tuesday and Wednesday at Erin Hills, and then we drove over there Thursday morning from, it was just me and DJ from Milwaukee, and a bunch of midday rain cleared out, had like a bluebird afternoon, early evening, but softened the course a little bit and there was no wind. It was, you know, like there's certain holes out there where you're standing there and you're like, shit, man, like there's so much going on. There's like 35, 40 bunkers. It's like Royal Lytham a little bit in spots where you're just like, it feels more random than it does like strategy, or it's like hit and hope in spots. And that's on a calm day. So, and as like a 2 handicap. So I can't imagine like the group ahead of us was 15, 20, 25 handicaps and they were getting their teeth knocked in. You know, but they're like the fourth hole, the channel's awesome, kind of wraps around, and then you do the inner loop, the second nine, and I mean, condition's awesome. The, you know, it's like one of the more impressive feats of engineering and design and architecture I've ever seen. Of like, Peter Florio was actually playing behind us. He was the guy that did it, like on the, you know, the video game or like all the CAD stuff that they took. And we had seen it prior to them grassing it in, like they were just finishing up shaping, and it's just so vast. I mean, it was just like this massive flat parcel of land that's, you know, probably 500-600 acres, and to see it kind of fully realized was just like, whoa, this took some serious balls and some serious foresight and commitment. I think I'll be really keen to see how they'd balance the private resort component of it. Like,
yeah,
you know, I think Monday through Thursday they're gonna have resort play, like a couple windows there, and then, but otherwise it's like, I think it's like $200,000, $250,000 to join. And
yeah, it wasn't like early on, but
yeah,
now it is. So it's, yeah,
private golf courses right now are wild. Like I'm down in Arizona right now, and I mean,
yeah,
you can't get onto a private course for under six figures.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Like, good luck.
And yeah, and I think that's the crazy thing up there too, is like, you know, short season, right?
Right.
And you've got,
and you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not a course I'd want to play every day. I mean, it'd be cool to play it every day because there's so many different hole locations and it would change every time you play it, right? There's a lot more width out there than you think. But it's just, I think my favorite golf is like Bandon Trails. Royal Dornick, where like you feel like you're on a journey, on a walk, whereas this feels like you're, you know, it's hyper technical, like, you know, mogul skiing on like a double black diamond where yeah, you got to hit your lines, and you know, and there's different lines you can take and all that, but once you commit to a line, you kind of gotta, you know, it's pretty point to point.
Have you ever traveled a little more west to the land of 10,000 lakes and played any golf in our hometown?
Yeah, so I played, trying to think.
Well, you went up to Northland with Chad, our boy Chad.
Yeah.
So yeah, Chad
Harvin's, yeah, great, man.
Chad's, yeah, our guy.
Oh, no, yeah, way.
He was like, I think, our first guest ever on the
first pod
on the
ever.
Pod. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
And
yeah.
Let me tell you what, Tron, you're in second place for like hottest start to a podcast, for like, you can tell pros, you know, that people that speak in front of cameras and microphones all day. I think you're second, only behind Chad.
Oh.
I shit you not, man. I pressed record, and he went 20 minutes.
Oh, like, sure.
Chad, just dude, a total
I don't know,
pro.
I'm a, yeah,
he's in a different
like,
universe.
I got to, yeah, introduce you on the podcast. Yeah.
No, he's in a different
dude, he
universe.
He was like going Tiger versus Phil. Like, I was, yeah, like, snap back, man. I,
yeah,
just,
he full, yeah, he sent it. It was the first one, and we were just like, holy shit.
Yeah. No, he's on a different level. Like, I'm, it's kind of crazy that I do this for a living. I still do sometimes. I used to stutter like crazy. I couldn't.
Really?
I can't speak in front of a large group, or, you know, like I could barely read. And like, I was always a really good reader, but I couldn't get the words out. I would stutter and stammer over myself. So it's kind of a surreal thing. I've just kind of been forced to kind of grow out of it. But
yeah,
I mean, Chad's like, you know, like Chad, or like there's a guy, Bob Sturm, that we're good friends with down in Dallas. He's like total pro. Or like, you talk to somebody, like, it's because it's the same deal when we have guys on our podcast too, like Scott Van Pelt will come on, or Mike Chirico, or Joe Buck's been on, or, you know, there's certain guys who are just like, holy shit. Like, they could filibuster you for 3 hours if they wanted to and not miss a beat. So, but Chad,
I want to give you the floor to just shit on Hazeltine. Just have at it.
Back to your ears. Yeah. Back to your question. So I'm trying to think where I played. Was it Braymore?
Yeah. Post Reno?
I played it. This would have been like 2020 maybe.
Post renovation.
Okay.
Is that pre good. Or post? Yeah, it's good.
Pretty
sure it's pre.
But yeah, it was really good. I was actually thinking about it last week. My family was out of town, and I kind of had like 2 or 3 free days after we played the Lido, and I was like, shit, should I just like drive over to Minneapolis and just tee it up and play some golf? And got a buddy, at Somerset, and then, you know, Interlochen, and God, it seems like, I mean, I'm dying to see what's the
Interlochen
one. Midland
closed right now, but the work they're doing, I mean, it is going to be very cool for a country club.
The Midland Hills renovation is sweet. It's the Rainer one. Yeah.
Yeah, that looks dope. It's awesome. And then we
play at Windsong Farm, which is awesome. That's where Chad is. And we just built another 18. John Fout came in and did it. So we have 2 18s now. It'll be done in the fall. But our first one is like a Lehman Fout kind of championship design. It's like fescue everywhere. It's all we love it. It's awesome.
Nice.
So anytime you're in town, man,
I'd love to.
Yes, you're 100% invited.
And then so I went up when I played left-handed for that year, and I went up and I guy Chris Foley, Panther Mike's dad, was like the he was kind of my guru, because Panther Mike's left-handed. So he was like, hey, come on up to, he was up at Gull Lake at one of those places up there, Craigens or Madden's.
Yeah.
And so I went up there, and then went up to Northland a couple times, and I've played probably 5 or 6 times at Northland. That place is dope. I love it up there.
Yeah, there's a ton of guys at our club that are also members at Northland, so it's there's always a couple trips a year up there, and it's Northland's sweet.
I've played White Bear. Yep. White Bear's dope. I've played Hazeltine. I played in the KPMG Women's PGA Pro-Am. I played with Angel Yin 1 year. And, it was kind of one of those places that, you know, you walk off. Unfortunately, I've played a lot of these places because there's a lot of pro tournaments that, you know, pretty nondescript. Just, you know, you kind of walk off and you're like, I can't remember more than like 3 holes kind of thing. So I'm really...
Now, holes 9 and 18 are
literally
exact
the same hole.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just a different...
And then you get to, like, the Ryder Cup, right? And they mess with the routing. And so then you remember certain holes, but you don't remember what the hole number is, or you just remember, like, this singular kind of hole. So I'm curious to see what they do with the renovation there and kind of what... Because I think that's what DL3 and...
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Sherman and those guys, Davis has done really good work. He redid the Plantation course at Sea Island. He's getting ready to redo Sawgrass Country Club down by me, and so they kind of bring in some of those like old school squared off edges and some old school design philosophies and stuff. Because Sherman, I think, came up under Pete Dye as well, so he's got kind of the Dye stuff, a lot of visual deception, and then he's got some of the Rainer McDonald stuff as well. Davis has obviously his you know, kind of resume
as a
pro golfer.
Have you played Crooked Stick, out of curiosity?
You know what? I haven't.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It looks sweet. I think
it's awesome.
So there's rumors that they're going to have the Solheim Cup. The next Solheim Cup in the U.S. is going to be at Valhalla, I guess they're talking about. I think they should go to somewhere like Crooked Stick.
Yes.
It's like, probably too short for a men's major now that, like, those guys would eat it up. But Indianapolis, like, perfect city to have a Solheim Cup. You know, like,
totally.
People will come out and support it. Like, that's, you know, shit, when they had the Solheim Cup in Iowa a few years ago, I think Erin Hills would be a great, great spot. Like, I think the upper Midwest of, like, how you guys turn out for, like, I think that's the one bummer about Hazeltine is, like, it's such a shitty layout. It's such a nondescript course, but the crowds are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Minnesota, know, Minnesota shows out. Man. Minnesota, yeah. Wisconsin, like those two states, anywhere in that area.
Of course, yeah, we're just...
Yeah, I mean, even like a place like Omaha, right? Like go to Omaha Country Club or go to, you know, I mean, it's the same thing with like Belle Reve. Like I don't like Belle Reve, but like Kansas, you know, St. Louis is starved for pro golf. They want it. So, yeah, great, you know, great fans in that part of the country.
What's on your list of like places you haven't played that you really want to get out to?
Internationally, I've never been to Northern Ireland. So taking my family, my wife's family's from Sweden, and so we're taking our two kids over for a couple weeks this summer, and our younger one doesn't have a Swedish passport yet, so we're getting his Swedish passport dialed. And then
Are you saying you're going to be in Northern Ireland?
So I'm trying to go Northern Ireland on the back end of that Sweden trip, but before the British Open. So I'm going to be a Troon for the British Open. That would be like
you're going to be there at the same time.
Yeah, well, Jordan and I are going the first 10 days in August.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I will be kind of free that like July 11th through like 14th or 15th.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So we've got a lineup.
So like Royal County Down, Port Rush, Port Marnock, you know, all of those, like Ardglass, we're going to see that. So I've never been to those. I haven't done a lot of the Heathland stuff. Played Woking, I've played New Zealand, but I've never done like Swinley, Sunningdale, you know, Berkshire, St. George's Hill, all that stuff. So that's high on the list. There's a ton of stuff in England. Like I think England's probably like the most underrated.
So slept on.
Like the depth in England, like all Woodley, Woodall Spa, like all that stuff in kind of, you know, the mid-north, you can get southwest, you can go down southeast, you can go play Brancaster, Silloth on Solway up north, all that.
Have you played Augusta?
I haven't played Augusta. Yeah.
What about Oakmont?
I haven't played Oakmont. That's one of my goals for this year.
Oh, is it?
Oakmont. Yeah.
I played it last year. Have a good buddy who's a member, and it was it blew my doors off for sure. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm going to try to make that happen in the fall.
Okay.
Because I've been going to Nebraska. I've been to Nebraska 3 times now. I've done Sand Hills a few times.
So high on
Wild
the list.
Wild Horse is so sick.
Yeah.
You know, like there's just, I mean, shit, there's so much cool stuff out there, like Frederick Peak. And I've never done Prairie Club, and I really want to see the new Hance one up in Valentine. Caprock Ranch. Trying to think what like domestically I haven't done.
Have you done Blue Jack? Blue Jack blew my doors off. I love that.
That looks cool. Houston's a cool city too. Like
we have a Blue Jack. We have an off-air Blue Jack story. If all of Bandon's courses were a private club, which one would you join?
Oh, Trails, 100%.
Yeah, hey, big Trails guy as well.
I love Trails. I mean, I know it's like cliche at this point, probably, but it's just, we were just out there for the 25th anniversary, and it's.
If Trails were in the middle of America, what would it be ranked?
Yeah, like, I mean, if Trails was just, if like the other courses didn't exist there, I think Trails and Pinehurst number 2 are the two best public courses in America. and it's like not even close. Like I would say, I think Trails, Pinehurst number 2, Wild Horse would be in my top 5. I think Rustic Canyon's up there, LA, like that place is sick.
Is Shadow Creek public? Everybody always says Shadow Creek is amazing.
I think Shadow Creek is
probably like great experience, right? But like I don't think like after playing there, I don't think I'm gonna like be writing home about the 14th
course wise it doesn't hang with like a Trails or
I've never played it, so I could be wrong there, but I would say like even like Pebble to me is like, I don't know, there's 6 or 7 really good holes on the water, but I think if you gave me a choice of playing Pebble and paying whatever it is to play there, it's like $2,000 for the hotel room for 2 nights. It's like a 2-night minimum, and then you got to pay, you know, it's like $700 or $800 for the round. Like it's a $3,000 round of golf. Or you said, hey, you can go play Pacific Grove 100 times because like $30 down the street. I would choose Pacific Grove 10 times out of 10. Like, I think Chambers Bay is up there. I think Chambers Bay
rocks, dude.
Wildly underrated. I think Erin Hills is up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are kind of, you know, best of the best for me. But yeah, I think Pioneer is number two in trails. And then I would say at Bandon, setting trails aside, it changes every time I go there, right? Like, it's in the past, I haven't been enamored with Old Mac. Now Old Mac has, they've like let the POA take over on the greens, and the greens are fantastic. And I feel like the slopes make more sense now. I think, you know, Sheep Ranch is a great walk. I don't think it's a great golf course necessarily. It's like just, you know, one of the better walks in the world. And then, you know, Bandon Dunes and Pacific Dunes kind of always go back and forth for me. I'm kind of pro Pacific right now.
Are you really?
Bandon's kind of slipping. And we're which going is crazy because the last like four Pacific or five
Pacific feels
years
indefensible
I've
been, to me. I don't know why. I'm a,
indefensible
I'm
a, in a good way, like
I just
or,
like I don't know. The prevailing wind is just stuff.
Yeah,
we're well, going. Yeah, I haven't played it in the winter, but
week,
like I want to play it in not in the summer.
So the first time we played it, so funny story there. First time we played it, this was like 2018, 2019. We had a super calm day, and I think we ate a bunch of edibles, like. The second round we played it, and it was just like this trend. The fog rolls in, it's like this transcendent day.
Yeah.
Next trip we go out, and I'm playing left-handed, and we get our dicks knocked in. I mean, just so hard. It was, you know, same thing. Prevailing wind. I was like, how could you ever, you know, McClay Kid. There's a story about McClay Kid going and routing Bandon Dunes after spending the last 18 months on site learning the winds and all that, and Doak. You know, like 14 to me is like one of the worst holes on property, par 3.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do there. And there's some other holes too where I'm like, if you're above like a 10 handicap and it's blowing out there, I don't know what you're doing. And then we went back out this past time and the weather was great. And I'm like, man, this course slaps so hard. So I vacillate. So then I wrote this article or like each of us wrote this essay about our favorite course at Bandon after the first time we went out there, and DJ wanted to write trails, so I was like, cool, that's fine. I'll, you know, trails is my favorite, but I think PAC's probably the best course after the first trip. So I write this article about like how much I liked it. It's this effusively positive article. And I related Doak to like an abusive lover. I'm like, hey, like it's just the highs are so high. It keeps you coming back even if it's a flawed relationship or yeah. You know, there's some mean-spirited shit there. And you know, I was like, same thing with Stream Song Blue, same thing with Barn Boogle, same thing with, you know, certain elements at some of his other courses. And, you know, at like the Loop or even some of the stuff that he's redone. And he writes me this email back and he was just like, how dare you psychoanalyze me? Like, dot.
It's like,
Jesus. And this was like super early on and no laying up. And that was going back to your question from earlier of like having your opinions out there and putting your name on something. And like, I still have the email and, you know, I touched a nerve somewhere along the line. And I was like, hey man, like, you know, I'm sorry you took it that way. Like, this was a truly positive thing. It just, you know, I just meant that like, you gotta, you know, if you're not executing, like you're gonna get kicked in the face a few times. Didn't like that. So
what are I want to get quickly into just some rapid fire questions here. We got a bunch of stuff from our listeners. So one question in here was, Tron, how did you discover Ludwig, and how much of the foresight and ability to identify talent is God given, and how much of it is learned?
God love it. I actually just saw him today. He was down here in Florida. So that was like a bit like the, you know, I've been like a European Ryder Cup fan and Solheim Cup fan for the last, God, since what, like before 2018. So it was Paris and then Whistling Straits, you know, U.S. team just blew the doors off of them. And I remember Randy and I sitting, we rented an RV that week. So we didn't have to drive back and forth to Milwaukee. And so we're just sitting in the RV and we're doing a pod. And, you know, it's such a blowout. I'm like trying to find something to talk about, right? And I'm just like, you know what, man? Like, we're going to be back. Like, because Solly is just like, oh, like, we got to give the next 4 or 5 Ryder Cups to the U.S. Like I don't see this. He's like so much recency bias. Like, I don't see this thing turning around. Like, you know, meanwhile, the U.S. hasn't won a, you know, haven't won an away Ryder Cups in like 20 years at this point, right? And, you know, so you're like, God, this is insane. So I'm like, dude, like, Solly, A, like, 2 years a long time. And, you know, it'll be a vastly different story when we get to Rome. But B, like, we got some horses in the back. We got some dudes coming. And I just looked up, like, the world amateur golf rankings. And I was like, yeah, we got this Ludwig guy. And
is that really how it started?
That was really how it started. And then, but then I started, like, you know, like, I could have just left it there. So I started kind of leaning into it more. And, like, the more I dug around, the more I'm like, oh, holy shit, we do have this Ludwig guy. Like, he's really freaking good. Like, a couple college guys reached out to me, and they're like, hey, like, I played with this guy last year and, you know, out in the desert, and, like, he was by far the best player I've ever played with. And, you know, we're talking to some of the assistant coaches at Texas Tech or some buddies of mine that are, like, scouts for agencies. And, like, to a man, they were all like, yeah, like, this guy's, like, the second coming of, like, Henrik Stenson as far as his ball striking goes. So, yeah, so like the more I learned about it, the more in I was, and I leaned into like the bit, but at that point it was just like, it's not even a bit. Like I truly believe that he's, and so then I played, I'm trying to think, we played with him when we were in Sweden. I just reached out to him like, hey man, we're pulling through your area of Sweden. Are you gonna be around? And my buddy helped me line that up. And then I remember talking to, played with Rory in the Pro-Am at BMW Championship at Olympia Fields in, what was that? I guess that was last summer. And you know, I'd been like hammering on like very legitimately like, hey, they need to give him a captain's pick because there's just no other great options here, right? And you might as well learn for the future and all that. And then I talked to Rory, and Rory's like, oh, dude, like, I'm in lock. Like, he's like, me and Eduardo Molinari are like, we are deep on that same, you know, line of thinking, train of thinking and all that. And then I think at that point, I'm not sure if at that point Ludwig had won the European Masters yet or not at Kranz, but it was right around that same time period. And it was one of those things where it was like, it very quickly went from a bit, like maybe end of 2021 into like tracking his college scores in 2022, and then, you know, following him turning pro in 23, and like, yeah, this guy's really fucking good, guys. Or I guess that was 2020 into 2021, 2022. Yeah.
And then so, we got in here, TC's take on terrible golf fashion trends. What are some observations you have of late?
I mean, right now it's just those hats.
It's the hats, yeah.
You know, like I saw something yesterday that was horrifying. It was the Dale, and it was like Sunningdale. I'm like, Sunningdale is like one of the best courses in the world. Like how have like the stodgy Brits fallen into this trap as well? Or you know, Davis Riley, feel bad because it wasn't his mom, but it was like after he won last week at Colonial, so somebody in his entourage was wearing one of those Hala hats from Valhalla. I caught it out on the pod, and I was like, that's so bad.
What do you think of Day's Malbon swag?
I don't mind it. I think some of it looks really good. I think some of it's like purposely egregious to like garner,
it's good marketing.
Like,
garner clicks.
Like they were trying to put him in overalls at one point, and he was like, no, that's where I draw the line. Like, we're not doing that. But like there's a pebble, and like there's certain instances where like the pants are going to blow him away. Like, he's, like, having trouble, you know, holding his balance because he's fluttering in the wind there. So I think at some point, like, it needs to be, there's got to be a push-pull there with performance versus fashion. Some of it feels a little over the top.
Jordan started rocking the upside-down smash hat. with the upside down lettering. That's pretty.
I like the upside down lettering. You got
I've
one?
I got my Cleeks hat right
Cleeks,
here.
Yes. The Cleeks hat actually kind of slaps.
Oh, yeah. And then I got this Cleeks hat.
And then just two more here. State of the Union with respect to airlines, and somebody asked if you want to apologize on behalf of United for I don't know what.
No, I'm so, yeah. I mean, it's weird. So you guys are probably Delta guys, right? Being
or
big
Delta, big Delta guys.
Being MSP.
Yeah.
MSP is a great airport.
We're both
right?
Delta
I feel
diamonds.
Like I'm in kind of a. Sometimes I feel like I'm in a shopping mall instead of an airport.
Yeah.
When it comes
in
to,
Jacksonville?
It's,
talking
it's
about the
practical, job. Though. No,
no,
MSP.
In MSP, oh, yeah. But the, I mean, Delta has the best hubs by far. Like, I grew up in Atlanta, right? My dad was always a platinum or diamond or whatever it was at the time. He was always, like, the top of the rung. He traveled a lot. And I didn't know, like, what a connecting flight was growing up. Like, you can fly anywhere in the world except for, like, Australia from Atlanta, yeah. Direct. And then I moved to Jacksonville. And it was like, you know, you just got to like ride the school bus to Atlanta. Like they fly the 757 every hour on the hour to Atlanta. And it takes longer to board the damn thing than it does to, you know, for the actual flight. And I think Atlanta's a really good airport, but like, I don't want to get dumped in there. Like I come back from the West Coast a lot and I don't want to get dumped in there at like 7 PM on a Saturday night or Sunday night with thunderstorms and all that. So United, like I won't fly American. American's possibly like the worst American owned and operated company in our great nation. It's like, it's truly like a reprehensible organization. They have dog shit hubs. It's bad.
It's
but so
bad.
I flew United to Australia the first time we went and like got status on it pretty quickly. And then kind of realized like from Jax, I can fly to Houston. Denver is about as far as we can get on a direct. Like, we're the biggest city in North America without a direct flight to the West Coast and without a direct flight to Europe or the UK. And so United's got a really good international network, and then I can typically, you know, fly through Denver, fly through Houston, Chicago sometimes. Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like I can kind of break up the trip and into two and a half hour flights instead of like a 4 hour flight and a 45 minute flight. And and frankly too, there's just not a whole lot of like elites here on United. So I always get upgraded. Like they're, you know, versus like my parents came down to visit last year. They flew down, they normally drive. They flew down and my dad's like a diamond on Delta. He was 78th on the upgrade list.
Yeah. We're having a huge problem with Delta right now there.
Yeah.
Sky Club access is also
everybody's
same
diamond
deal.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
Everybody's diamond.
It's a problem. And they went to the card meeting. If you travel for work like we do, you're getting screwed by the card thing. It's not good.
Yeah,
the
250 minimum on the card
or
whatever.
It's asinine.
It's
crazy. And then I used to get asinine miles, you know. I used to get status from just flying. And now I don't get differentiated from just your card holder with status. That's just peasant. I think.
But they've got, and like, that was the thing that pissed me off in Atlanta, too, was like, it's actually cheaper a lot of the time for me to fly from Jacksonville to Scotland or, you know, Jacksonville to LA than it is from Atlanta to Scotland or Atlanta to LA on a direct.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm flying an extra flight, but they've got everybody in Atlanta by the balls. So it's the same thing in Salt Lake, same thing in Minneapolis, Detroit, all those places. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think Delta is by far the best, product, but, you know, it's just...
Wall to wall.
You're paying for it, too.
I've flown for United for 30 years, so they're solid.
Yeah,
and then
I feel like they're getting a lot better, too. Like, since I started flying them 5 years ago, 6 years ago, like, they've improved by leaps and bounds. They got all sorts of new aircraft coming.
Yeah, for sure.
The Polaris lounges are fantastic for international. Mm-hmm. And then like Star Alliance is sweet too. Like whenever I go to Scotland or the UK, I always fly through Germany just because it's a longer flight, you know, nicer planes, and I get dumped into Frankfurt or Munich. They have great lounges. And then I fly into Edinburgh or Glasgow from there that morning. It's great.
Tron, before we wrap, want to give you the floor for any advice you have for a couple of idiots like us launching down the podcast train. We're a year in, 60 some odd episodes, but we'd
this
just
will
love
be 72.
Love any motivation. Okay. Oh, this will be 72. Okay. Love any motivation or thoughts or advice you have from the C-suite.
What's your cadence? Like, are you guys doing multiple a week?
Weekly.
Are you doing...
Once a week.
One a week.
One a week? Okay.
One a week, six social posts.
Okay. And then how much do you structure out the episodes prior versus just firing up the mics and riffing?
50-50.
If we're being completely honest, I was going to say 75 riff, 25 structure.
Okay. I would say one piece of advice, don't get away from the riffing. Like, I think, you know, structure is good, or like build the sandbox, but then have plenty of space to kind of be creative with edit. Like that's what Randy and I do on our Trap Drop podcast, and people, you know, people that started listening to you guys in the first place want to keep, and sometimes as you grow and get more structure, more organized, you kind of lose that magic that brought people to you in the first place. So I would say, you know, stick with some of the spontaneity and some of the off the wall stuff. That'd be one thing. I guess our motto has always been like, we take the golf seriously, but not ourselves. And, you know,
I think we do all right at that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that's something else too, is just, you know, at the end of the day, it's just golf. Like, right.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, there's so much stuff, like whether you're talking architecture or pro golf or travel or whatever, like there's so much, yeah, there's just so much seriousness and faux seriousness of like, at some point, like you're just chasing a white ball around a field and trying to get into a hole.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with like,
I've always said, if you were to explain golf to some, or like sports, all of them, to somebody that just didn't know any sports, golf would be the most ridiculous one to explain, right? You'd be like, you're going to get this little ball in this hole 500 yards away and five shots, and here's your four clubs.
Yeah.
Right? They'd look at you like you're crazy, right? And oh, by
the
way, kind of on
it's
this
like
piece,
that Robin Williams thing. Have you ever listened to that where he's
the
like,
four-letter word?
Yeah. Or yeah, he's just like, yeah, and then like you, we're going to hit around this field, and then, then we're going to throw shit in between you and the hole. Like, it's like, what? Yeah, this is crazy. So yeah, that would be something else. Like, I'm big into wine, and same thing in wine. It's like, at some point, like, it's just fucking grapes. Like, it's not like people are like, oh, you know, the tannin and all. And it's like, yeah, like there's a lot of elements and there's a lot of, you know, little details and stuff, but it can become so intimidating. And at some point, it's like, it's agriculture, it's farming, it's, you know, it's like, if you like it, then it's good. If you don't like it, then, you know, it's like, it's all the eye of the beholder. Same thing with golf courses, the same thing with, like, I have all sorts of like irrational, you know, like Xander a couple weeks ago, like, Xander just doesn't do it for me, right? People are like, oh, I like, why do you not like Xander? What did he do to you? It's like, he didn't do anything to me. I just like, sometimes I just don't like shit. It just doesn't agree with me, you know?
Yeah.
So
I'm with you on Xander. I don't know, something, he just has a very square vibe.
The fact that he's like best friends with Cantlay and they like do everything together, like that's kind of disqualifying, right?
I gotta tell you my, God.
I was just going to say too, like, I think the other thing is like, don't be afraid to try new stuff. Don't be afraid to like, you know, like that's always our thing, is like, we're always trying to, hey, what's next, or what's, you know, like, but when you do that, it's easy to like lose sight of what made you special in the first place. So have that balance between, as you grow, you know, what's next, how do we keep iterating this while at the same time, you know, kind of keep in the same spirit. Cause I think there's something in golf right now and just media in general of like, shit's moving so quickly that you can gain an advantage or a foothold in something much, much more quickly now than you could have, you know, 5 years ago even. Now, like, granted, like there's the first mover stuff 5 to 10 years ago, but now it's like, you know, all right, with video stuff going to Spotify, or, you know, podcasts going to YouTube, all that, the video stuff, or the way you know, socials going and all that, like, don't be afraid to try new stuff. And because I think there's something there with like, just kind of people want to come hang out, and they want you to make them feel good, right?
Yeah, no.
And they're not going to really remember what you talked about, like, in 3 months. They're probably not going to remember what you talked about. Or, you know, try to inform them or entertain them, and then be like, just try to like leave them making, like, make them feel better than they did prior to the podcast.
That's such great advice, man. And I got to close with a quick story. My favorite golf story that I've ever had, and one of the reasons, at least for me, for doing this podcast. But you mentioned the Solheim Cup, and I think it was 2 years ago. I was like super burnt out with work, corporate job, you know, just crazy. And I just like flew to Scotland by myself for a week and rented a car and fucking drove around. And like, I was emailing pro shops. I played Muirfield.
Where'd you go? North.
Yeah. I played, I played the Old Course twice, singles queued in. I played, Gullen. I played Muirfield, did the full Muirfield day.
Muirfield's on my list for the summer. I still haven't done it.
I liked it a lot. It's awesome. And then I played North Berwick. And at North Berwick, it was the only round like the whole week that I wasn't paired up like with a group. And actually, there was a group of Americans playing in front of me as a threesome. And they're like, we don't want a fourth. Which is like, that doesn't happen. Like, Europeans don't do that. That's like a totally American move. So I had a caddy. And anyway, so you played North Berwick, right? So I drove like in the middle of the green at one. And I'm walking down the fairway with my caddy, and like we're talking, and you know, as is common in Scotland, he's like, I'm a member here at the club.
Yeah.
And I'm like, shit, dude. I'm like, do you want to just play? Like, this is pretty stupid that it's just I'm playing as a single and you're caddying. I'm like, I'm happy to pay you to play. Like, I'd rather.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'll play. And he goes back, he like runs back, you know, I'm on the first green. He runs back to the clubhouse. You can picture it. And he comes running back up the fairway with his wife, and she's got her
sticks,
right?
Let me guess, this is Katrina Matthews' husband.
Katrina Matthews, yeah. And her husband. So I played 18 with them. And it was awesome.
That's so sick.
And I didn't figure out it was her until like three. Like, she literally pegged it from our box and hit it like 260 down the middle and hit it to like 4 feet at two. And I was like, holy shit. And then I realized like halfway in. And so like to this day, we're buddies, you know? But like that's golf in a nutshell, you know? And that's like what I love about it. And you know why we're doing the podcast, just to share stories like that and have memories like that, you know, because I'll never forget that day. Like, for the rest of my, like, to this, she hit my driver like six times because I had an auto flex shaft in it, and she ended up ordering one from like a buddy. Like, it was just total comedy, right? Like, all day. But here I am.
Yeah,
with, like,
she was
the
there.
Great...
She was there the day we played it. The
was
first
she
time
really?
I played.
yeah. I'm like, here I am with the greatest female Scottish player like of all time. And her husband, who caddied for her on the LPGA tour, and we're just like having a day. It's like, this doesn't happen.
That's
if you don't
sick.
Put yourself out there, go there alone, you know, take a caddy, like say yes, do all the things. But it was just this like, you know.
That's such a Scotland thing too.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, golf's so egalitarian and so disconnected from like social status. Or, like, it's kind of the great like level playing field.
So much
way.
Better over there for all those reasons. So, Tron, thank you, brother. This was awesome, man. We really appreciate you coming on. And like I said, anytime you're in Minnesota, we will set it all up for you. You've got to do nothing. We'll play full round at Windsong. We'll maybe go down to Spring Hill. We'll do it all. There's
sick.
A lot of good
well,
golf
yeah.
here. So,
no, thanks for having me on. These are always fun. It's like, I think one other piece of advice is like ask people in the industry for help. People, you know, people, if they're worth their salt, they want to help, or they want to, you know, like, they may be busy for a little bit, or like, but stay on people, and like, they'll, you know, you need advice, or you need to figure out how to set something up, or, and I think there's a bunch of podcasts, especially that like, people do 20 episodes and then they flame out. So the fact that you guys have been doing this at a regular cadence and then 72 of them in, you know, the first year and a half, like, that speaks something. You're past 95% of the people that start podcasts to begin with. So
golf's
you know,
a small like, world, man. We've realized how just many cool people there are, and like, you're not that far away from
totally,
you know, some meeting some really high up cool people in the industry that we see on TV all the time. Like, we're talking with Shane Bacon next week, who coincidentally helped us at our club build our new logo.
Oh yeah, with his TUR,
Ground and Repair.
Shane, like Shane, logo. Like, it's Shane Bacon.
Yeah, Shane's a great example of like, you know, Shane was cool to us coming up. Like, we were kind of coming up at the same time, and Shane's always been cool to us. Or, you know, I mean, shit, even like, you know, guys like Gil Ants. It's like, you know, Gil like didn't, we weren't anybody, and Gil was like, oh yeah, like I'll hop on, and, you know, or still good friends with him. And so it's cool. It's like, don't, you know, I would say too, like being up in Minnesota, like you guys have such a passionate, like for how short the season is in Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, it's similar, like, you know, obviously it's Scandinavian in nature, but like similar to Sweden or Scotland even, of like, it's, you know, the weather sucks, but like you guys are the most passionate golfers, most hardcore golfers of anybody in the country. You know, it's like people are like, oh, you live in Florida, you know, the golf must be great. I'm like, no, the golf fucking stinks. I'm looking forward to like going up to Pennsylvania and Minnesota and Michigan and, you know, Oregon, like that's where the really good golf is, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, we've been trying to rile our base.
And I feel like you guys have a good sense, like you're fortunate and you're grateful for the great weather that you do get. Like you guys have, I mean, summer in Minnesota is like, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. Tron, thank you so much, man. Yeah. Can't thank you enough for coming on. Really appreciate it. I know our listeners, most importantly, our listeners will absolutely love this episode. So you're the man.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Tron. Have a great rest of your day, man.
You too.